engagement by our national governments, including the United States, on human trafficking and forced labor issues has been really inconsistent. We've had some excellent momentum. We saw the adoption of the Uyghur Forced Labor Prevention Act. Our USTR has been putting together a new strategy for forced labor within the trade sphere. On the other hand, we couldn't even reauthorize the Trafficking Victims Protection Act.
Human trafficking doesn't always take the form we first imagine. It can be found at almost any level of an organization's supply chain. What can compliance professionals do to assess human trafficking risk, and how can they leverage the resources of the organizations they work for to help root out this tragic problem? Gwen Hassan is here to help. This is Hidden Traffic.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Hidden Traffic. I am your host, Gwen Hassan, and I am very excited today after semi-stalking her for months. I have got Kristen Abrams. She is the Senior Director Combating Human Trafficking for the McCain Institute out of Washington, D.C. So welcome, Kristen. I'm happy to have you here.
Hi, Gwen. I'm happy to be here.
So let's start a little bit and talk about how you got to where you are today. So where did you first start thinking, oh, I would like to work in human trafficking prevention? And how did you end up doing so at the McCain Institute?
It happened pretty organically. After law school, I was working at a large multinational firm here in DC, enjoying a lot of my billable work, but also doing quite a bit of pro bono work. Mm-hmm. And some of my early pro bono work was representing individual survivors as they were working to get T visas. I did also some refugee and asylum work as well, and really came to love that more human rights focus of my practice. I got really lucky that my firm created a pro bono organization to do pro bono legal services in post-conflict and developing countries. And I was selected for a management position within that organization. And so was able to leave my billable practice, transition into a full-time pro bono management role where I spent a lot of time working on women's empowerment, human rights work, including some trafficking work. And when I left the law firm, I started consulting for a number of organizations. For a period of time, was the acting director of the Alliance to End Slavery and Trafficking. And from that, I came to the McCain Institute, and I've been here over 6 years now, focused full-time on combating human trafficking. Maybe I'll say just a minute or two about the McCain Institute.
Sure.
I don't know
how
many of your listeners will know, but we're a nonpartisan organization. We were inspired by the late Senator John McCain and his family. I've worked very closely with Mrs. McCain over the years, who is a really tireless advocate for combating human trafficking, is now spending her time as Ambassador McCain, representing the U.S. at the World Food Program. But we're part of Arizona State, but as you mentioned, we're based in D.C. The programs at the Institute focus on defending democracy and human rights, combating human trafficking, and preventing targeted violence. And our overall mission is to create a world that's free, safe, and just for all. But I think the human trafficking program actually fits nicely into the free, safe, and just, since that's a part of the work that we're doing in this space.
Agreed. I love the career story because so many people that I talk to end up working in a place that they wouldn't have predicted when they started. Although maybe these days they do, but at least when I went to law school, very few people went to law school and said, I want to become a human trafficking expert. But the twists and turns of life and career, you know, brought you there, and now you are, which is really cool.
When I mentor and speak to young students, whether in college or law school, I always remind them that I think the most interesting careers and career paths tend to be nonlinear. Mm-hmm. And so as long as you're either learning a new skill or learning a new subject matter, I say, go for it. If you're not learning a new skill and you're not learning a new subject matter, then maybe not the right step. But I definitely thought it was kind of one foot after another and you climb the ladder and this is what you do. And my career has been far from that.
Mine too. And very often, and when I talk to people, I remind them of the value of raising your hand and saying, hey, I don't know anything about that, but I'd like to. And can I volunteer to do some work on that? Or can I help you with that? And that for me has led to a bunch of different changes in my career over the years. I always talk to law students about that as well. So my understanding is, and correct me because I could be wrong, but the McCain Institute, I mean, when it first started out, it couldn't actually really focus on legislative advocacy because the senator was still a senator. And then there was that inherent conflict of interest there that didn't work. But now, unfortunately, that he has passed away, the McCain Institute has shifted a bit and is more focused on legislative advocacy. Is that a fair statement?
Certainly within the human trafficking program. In the early days, we wanted to avoid even an appearance of a conflict of interest. And so we didn't do a lot of legislative advocacy. I think we've always been a voice in the space, but we weren't engaged directly on Capitol Hill. What I've observed and what I think many in this space have observed in the last five-ish years is that the engagement by our national governments, including the United States, on human trafficking and forced labor issues has been really inconsistent. We've had some excellent momentum. We saw the adoption of the Uyghur Forced Labor Prevention Act. Our USTR has been putting together a new strategy for forced labor within the trade sphere. On the other hand, we couldn't even reauthorize the Trafficking Victims Protection Act. Right? And it's not just the US. We're seeing this kind of uneven and inconsistent engagement from our national governments, not just legislatures, but our national governments on human trafficking. And I think as there has been new and persistent conflict, we're seeing huge food insecurity, the pandemic, we know that vulnerability has gone up, but unfortunately, the prioritization fighting human trafficking, modern slavery, forced labor has fallen really low on the priority of what governments are doing. So I think it's become more important that organizations are regularly engaging with our elected leaders to remind them we're talking about 28 million approximately victims of human trafficking. We spend very little to fight human trafficking. So we are trying to engage with our partners and be a more regular presence on Capitol Hill and with the administration to ensure that the U.S. is a leader in the space, because I think the global community needs the U.S. to lead. And as an American, I think we should be.
I agree 100%. Which leads to the logical next question, which is, given the split that we now find ourselves with in Congress, do you think that we'll get there? I mean, do you think we'll get the TVPA reauthorized? Do you think this will become more of a bipartisan issue like it should be? And kind of what are your hopes for where this is headed?
So when you talk to, honestly, anyone, including policymakers, there is universal agreement that combating human trafficking and modern slavery is something we should do. I never go into a meeting and say, I'm here to talk to you about human trafficking, and have staff or member be like, no, I'm not really interested. Like, everyone says they're interested in this. They want to work on it. So like, that does give me some optimism that we have a comparative advantage, that we get to go in and talk about an issue that is universally condemned. I think more than the split, a partisan split, because it tends not to be a partisan issue and it shouldn't be a partisan issue, is we've lost a number of our champions because they've left Congress. What we're thinking about here is, how do we educate staff and build a bigger bench of champions so that then, yes, we have sponsors and then we have lots of co-sponsors of legislation that then we can demonstrate to leadership, like, this needs to go for a committee hearing and this needs to get to the floor. I think there will always be partisan differences on any issue, and we're not going to see that go away just because it's something we care about. But I do think at its core, there is strong bipartisan support. We just have to do a better job of engaging policymakers often and with the new data that we have.
So speaking of new data, great segue. Thank you. I know you just got back from a meeting in London where you met with prosecutors from, is it 18 different countries? And all of them work on human trafficking prevention, but also enforcement. So how do you feel coming out of that meeting? Was it hopeful? Did you leave feeling like, you know, the future of multilateral fight for human trafficking prevention is an area that we should be excited about? Or did you leave feeling like, oh, we've got so much work to do, or a combination of the two?
So I left feeling elated and so inspired. These prosecutors, so we formed the Global Prosecutors Consortium with the UK-based NGO Justice and Care. And we bring together specialized human trafficking prosecutors. So these are the people working in the criminal justice system in currently 18 countries to talk about the challenges that they're having, the opportunities that they've seen, how they've overcome some of those challenges, and really build a network. Like, I know that I rely on my peers for all sorts of advice when I hit a problem. And what we saw is that there are so many similar challenges that criminal justice systems around the world are facing as it relates to prosecuting human trafficking offenses. We've seen victimization and vulnerability go up, yet the data, and there's new data just out from UNODC that's showing a decrease in investigations, prosecutions, and convictions. And so our goal was, we're not going to solve this problem overnight, but can we bring together this subset of professionals to allow them to build that intimate professional network that they can try and become leaders within their own judicial system, but then also have some collective voice to advocate as a group of the people really in the arena, in the trenches, working to secure justice, not only for the state, but for victims. And that was a really interesting conversation. We had Sophie Otiende, who's a phenomenal CEO of the Global Fund to End Modern Slavery, kick off the event. And she led us into a conversation about the tension between justice for a victim and justice for the state. So our prosecutors are prosecuting on behalf of the state for a crime that, yes, has a multitude of impacts, including on the state, but also on that individual victim. And so how do we keep, as we work through the criminal justice system as like one part of the solution, mm-hmm. how do we make sure that we keep the individual victim really at the center of the work? And it's not easy when you're talking about criminal justice. So I was really glad to have her there. And our prosecutors were super interested in thinking about that. They were not only interested in thinking about justice for the state, but really for victims as well.
What a great idea that you're helping them build the network of other people in the same space who they can support each other and learn from and share best practices from. I know I have that kind of network within corporate compliance that I turn to all the time for, hey, I'm dealing with this issue and I'm not sure how have you handled it? Or, boy, I could really use some resources in this area. Do you have anything that I could borrow or look at? And it never occurred to me, I will say, kind of foolishly now that I'm thinking about it, that prosecutors, especially in this space, might be kind of siloed and feeling on their own and like solo warriors. And what a great idea that you're bringing them together to build that network. I love that. So we've talked a bit about the enforcement side, prosecutors, and the legislative policy side. If those are two legs of the stool, what's the third? Is it companies? Is it kind of pushing institutional investors to care more about this issue? A combination of both? What do you see there?
I think I'm going to make it a table, not a stool, and give you two other legs. I'm going to start with, and yes, engagement with the private sector. I think that how we do that is really complicated. Some of it is going to be driven by consumer demand. Some of it's going to be driven by what you also mentioned was legal enforcement, but also regulatory enforcement. We're seeing a lot of interesting work being done in the US. I mentioned the Uyghur Forced Labor Act, some great work that's being proposed in Europe as well to keep goods produced with forced labor out of these major economies' supply chains. So I think there is a lot of momentum going in that direction. What that's going to mean is that companies are going to have to better assess their supply chain and audit where the goods, you know, way down the supply chain are being produced to ensure that they're not being produced with forced labor. I think we need to have that happen. We're going to need both of those pieces, the consumer demand and regulatory enforcement. And yes, I do think institutional investors play a big part of that. We're working on a project with some institutional investors to help them be able to estimate the risk of forced labor in the companies that they may hold in their portfolio and within those corporate operations. I think regulatory, consumer demand, investor demand, like all pushing as a piece of this private sector engagement is really important. But the fourth leg that I'll mention is going to be survivor leadership. We don't yet have a movement led, informed with survivors at the center. And there are some amazing people. Sophie, who I mentioned earlier, is working to change that. The National Survivor Network, Survivor Alliance. This is an area that we have ignored, and I hold myself accountable for a long time, and it has to change. So I think we've got to continue doing all of this other work. I don't think we can like press pause. I think it's a both and, but thinking about how we ensure that survivors are at the lead of all of this work will be really important if we ever want to make a serious dent in combating human trafficking in this country and around the world.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate your insight, Kirsten. And I've had a couple of survivor groups on, but you know what? This is a good reminder that here in the podcast, I should find some other survivors to talk to us. So I'm taking that away as a to-do for me too. So real quickly, as we come to our end here, how do people get in touch with you if they want to continue this conversation or learn more about the McCain Institute?
Yeah, so anyone should feel free to reach out to me. You can get me on Twitter, on LinkedIn. My email is kabrams2@asu.edu. So start there and we'll take the conversation forward.
Great. Thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate it.
Oh, I was so glad to do it. Thanks, Gwen.